it's important to know what you need to know about your profession, right? To understand the science, to understand the science of healing, but more importantly, it's to be a caring individual and to understand the person in front of you and how their disease or disability is unique. So that really caring about your patients and taking time to understand them, to me, is the most important. And I think that's one of the best joys of being a physical therapist.
All right, for this episode, we went to Boston, the MGH Institute of Health Professions. I want to thank the faculty and students there for, well, put on a pretty kick-ass show. And this one, a little bit different. Theme, interprofessional collaboration. So I have professors from multiple disciplines. So we have PT, OT, SLP, and PA represented. Take a listen. Show's brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Check them out online at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pintcast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce...
Please allow me to introduce you to...
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in Beantown. Massachusetts General Hospital, the Institute of Health Professions. We are doing the live show with the students who are in the house right now. Come on down, Laura Plummer, physical therapist. All right, so describe your role besides just having a giant posse.
Yeah. So I teach in the physical therapy program, hence the posse, yeah. And I'm actually teaching the first years, and I've already taught the third year, so teaching all of them.
So is she well-liked, or what's the deal? Well-liked? Yeah. And what do you teach? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but I also teach in the impact, the interprofessional.
Yeah, and I like that I'm hearing all this interprofessional collaboration, which is why it's a theme here. So talk about your story. How'd you come to this fantastic profession?
Oh, so I tell this story. They've already heard this story, all of them.
But I haven't.
But I always tell them that they've picked the best profession and that I picked it when I was like 16 years old because it was back in the day that you could get a bachelor's degree in physical therapy, and there's not been one day that I've regretted making that choice. And it was primarily around my grandfather being ill, and he had been this huge athlete, and he had lost a lot of mobility from arthritis, but more so from depression too, and not being able to move around. And he went to New England rehab, actually. And you know, at the time, I'm sure it was a team of people, but he really loved his physical therapist. And not only did she help him to move again, but she really gave him a whole new outlook on life. And once I saw that, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And so I did a community classroom in PT as a high school student, and I never turned back.
The rest is history.
I went on to accrue several more degrees in PT.
Yeah. Next step,
here I am.
Get a posse and then just celebrate.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I pay them.
Yeah, no, yeah. Smart. Yeah. Bonus points for the latter you can be. So the impact program, you brought that up. I've kind of asked similar questions to all the other professions, the professionals who've been up on the show so far. So describe that program from your angle, from your lens.
So interestingly, I've been involved in impact since it started at the IHP. I actually was one of the people who helped develop the first impact course, which was a huge flop. Students hated it.
Okay.
It was awful.
Hold on, let's not move past that failure. I want to bring
past
failure.
That failure, and we've made some changes from the original.
So why, and what'd you change?
So I think, first of all, it was way too much for the one credit that it was. That was one of the problems.
You went big early.
Yes, but I think we also kind of didn't take into consideration that we were thinking all these students who were starting in this impact, the first course, were like brand new, had no experience, had no clinical background. And so we didn't make it as clinically relevant. We did the Cowboys and Pit Crew, and we did a lot of different things, but we didn't have as much that was really relevant to patients or experiential for the students. And I think that's what we finally learned and continue to change over the years. Every year, impact changes. It's actually changing again this year. So.
Yeah. What are the things you're adding to it, or what are the things things that you're proud of that have been brought to it that makes it a little bit better each time?
So one of my favorite parts of Impact is the second course, actually, is in the first course, it's the patient, interprofessional patient history that we do. That's one of my favorite things, and we kind of model an interprofessional patient history and then talk about that, and the students get to see that and be part of it. And then my favorite part is probably Impact 2, and I'm involved in the simulation portion of it, because I think simulation is a great way to learn, not just with, so I tend to not do the mannequins who are going into cardiac arrest, but I do, we do interprofessional experiences where even the Harvard medical students come in now, and they get to interact around different patient cases with standardized patients. And I just think it's a really great low stakes environment to try some of these things out and understand like what can go well and what can go wrong.
You say low stakes, but then you hear standardized patient, that can't be fun or easy.
No.
It's low stakes for you because you have a clipboard.
It's low stakes for me because I'm on the other side watching it. I just watch them on video.
That's super low stakes for you.
Yeah. But high stakes for them.
What do you see the students getting out of it and taking away from it from beginning to end? Or how do they change is really what I'm looking for.
So I think on the face of it, it looks like it's going to be easy, right? You're going in, see they're nodding their heads, right? You're going into a patient's room. You've done patient histories before. This isn't going to be a big deal. You know, you haven't done it with a whole team, but you've done it, and you know what you're doing. And then you get in there, and you realize how difficult it is and how to work that team dynamic and really respect the other people that are in the room and actually get the information that you need from the patient that is, you know, overarching that you for all of the professions that you need to understand.
So just so I'm setting the stage right, because I've never seen it. So standardized patient in the room, and there's students from multiple disciplines in there at the same time. Wow. Yeah.
There's a physician, PA, nursing, speech, OT, PT, all in.
How large of a room is this?
It's a fairly big
room.
Some people are observers, while other people are doing it.
And I'm just hearing this, and I know from my background in radio, you put two or three people on a radio show together, and if they've never danced together before, it can go wrong quick.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of stepping on toes.
Yeah. It can be stepping on toes. We've added the Harvard medical students who have, you know, and so it's interesting. Well, we that's not to say that they're the ones stepping on toes. Sometimes it's us.
You also didn't not say it.
I did not say it. But, you know, one of the things about understanding collaborative practice is understanding the history of healthcare, too. And there has always been a hierarchical organization to healthcare, and now we're changing that. And so I've seen it over my 20 years of practice in the various settings that I've been in of how that's changed. Patients are becoming so much more complex. There's no way that one profession can manage the patients that are in front of them. And the medical schools are appreciating that, and they approached us and were like, we need to be involved in this impact thing. How do we get involved in the IPDEU? The physicians are asking about how do we get involved in this, because that's not like been the history of medicine. And so now it's you don't just work well in a team, right? I mean, even sports teams, you know that it takes a while to gel. So understanding each other is really important, and understanding how to work as a team member and how to communicate and how to listen is just so important. And those are skills that you have to develop. They just like professionalism doesn't come naturally, right? You learn that, hopefully.
Yes, unfortunately, yes, we do.
Some of us.
How can you take something like this impact program and really get it to spread throughout a profession? Because again, I've alluded to this several times, especially during this episode, is it's used a lot to the point where it's a bit cliche, except you guys are actually really, really, really doing it. How do you get something like that to spread so it isn't just something in school? Because we've mentioned before, sometimes the systems aren't set up where we'll even let us be a pit crew together, where it's just a bunch of cowboys. What's it going to take profession-wide to get this thing to really catch on?
So I do think that there's more and more institutions who are doing it because of the accreditation standards that are now part of many of our disciplines. But I think part of it, too, is researching and disseminating what we're finding. So I know as the IHP, that's one of our goals, is to look at our impact curriculum and our various other interprofessional activities that we're doing. find out what we're doing well, find out what could be done differently. There's no real accepted pedagogy for what's the best way to teach interprofessional education because not enough people have looked at it and researched it, right? So I think that's the next step is these institutions that are doing it. And there is actually a National Center for Interprofessional Education in Minnesota. So these ones that are doing it should be actually looking at what they're doing, seeing, measuring the scholarship of teaching and learning, understanding what is it that we do well and what needs to be different and how does that change the outcomes. Do we actually have students that go out who are collaborative ready and are they different than students who don't go through an impact interprofessional curriculum?
Let's science it and figure it out.
Science it.
All right. What makes a good PT?
Oh, what makes so my I so the again the first years have had to hear me incessantly lately. So my favorite APTA logo was like the 2008 or something, the Art of Caring, the Science of Healing.
Okay.
So which is the banner for their course this year, and I think you know it's important to be to know what you need to know about your profession, right? To understand the science of healing, but more importantly is to be a caring individual and to understand the person in front of you and how their disease or disability is unique and that their life and their family and everything that goes around provides that context for that. So that really caring about your patients and taking time to understand them to me is the most important. And I think that's one of the best joys of being a physical therapist is we don't have 15 minutes with people, which some of our other professionals do. We have much more time with them and we also have time over multiple weeks. So really getting to know your patients and taking advantage of the fact that you have that in the healthcare world is important.
I would say drop the mic and walk off stage, but I actually own that mic, so please don't drop it. But that was well said. I think that's what we should look forward to. You ready for your parting shot?
That can't be.
I know, well, I was literally, as you were saying that, I was like, ugh, but now you have to come up with something better, so no pressure.
This is The Parting Shot.
Brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. The Brooks IHL hosting their third annual scholarly symposium. That's on May 19th in Jacksonville, Florida. Chad Cook is the keynote speaker. The day's filled with evidence-based scholarly activities. You do not want to miss it. Register today at brooksihl.org.
We'll go with the profession, you know, out there listening, not just students, because you're very, very, I'm sure that she drops a lot of parting shot-like quotes during class, a lot of nodding going on. What's something the profession should pay attention to get this interprofessional collaboration to really take off and gel?
I mean, I think we all need to become invested in it, in the profession, in order for it to happen. I think all of our institutions, our academic institutions, need to be embracing it and making sure that it's part. And it's not just, I think we in the past used to do this, like we had this graduate school and we'd put students in the same room, but we didn't actually have them learning from, with, and about each other, which is interprofessional education. We just sat them next to each other and like somehow they were supposed to get that was
osmosis.
Interprofessional. Yeah, so I think we, exactly, diffusion, osmosis, they were supposed to just learn that was interprofessional. And I think that you know, probably still exists some, and that as a profession, we really need to embrace this and move it forward and make sure that we're really having students learn from, with, and about each other so that we are able to go out and work in teams well. Because I have, as Rebecca said, it makes such a difference, and I've seen the good and I've seen the bad. So that's what I would say for our profession.
No, you didn't think you had another parting shot, and you pulled that out. Well done.
Stand by. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the PT Pinecast.
The show is brought to you by Aureus Medical Staffing. Quite simply, I could talk on and on about Aureus, and I do on the show, because they've supported us from the start. But what Aureus does is they find you a job wherever you want to go. They've got placements, jobs for PTs in all 50 states. That's how many there are, right? 50? Right. 50 states in all settings. So where do you want to go? Check out where their jobs are. Talk to a recruiter. And again, want to make sure you know, this doesn't cost you, the PT, anything, all right? You just get to go do the thing you want to do, treat patients where you want to do it, and get paid for it. Aureus is just the person to make that happen. AureusMedical.com. That is where you can find them. Talk to a recruiter there. Paid travel and housing. Benefits go with it. Again, positions in all 50 states. A variety of settings. Go here, try this. Don't like the area? Go somewhere else. Short and long-term assignments. Even Con Ed money, You can travel from position to position or take some time off in between. Listen, you put a lot of work into becoming a physical therapist. Do it on your terms now. Travel the country getting paid to be a PT. AURUSmedical.com.
Let's do this. Back to the PT Podcast with Jimmy McKay.
All right, another physical therapist up here. Chris Klock, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Chris, what's your role here?
I'm an instructor, the lowest level on the totem pole of
Good.
Academia.
Good. Listen, man, I'm a podcast host. I'm not sure you get lower than that.
I like that.
Yeah. So as an instructor, what do you instruct?
I work mostly in the first year curriculum, getting these guys ready for when they can implement some of this impact stuff. I was started as a lab instructor with the Institute about 7 or 8 years ago and stuck around long enough for them to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe you should teach some more because we need somebody to teach. So here I am.
Which is actually a really good lesson. Just kind of hover. Just kind of hang and just stay there. I got my first job in radio by doing that. I'm like, I'm just not going to leave.
Essentially.
Eventually they'll put you on the payroll.
Yeah.
Maybe give you a key.
It's worked out. They don't seem to want me to leave yet, so
yeah,
it's good.
So we've been talking a lot. You got a chance to kind of hang in the wings there and listen to what all the other professionals were talking about, interprofessional collaboration and how it's put into place in this academic environment. Yep. When you were kind of taking it all in and really hearing your colleagues talk about it, is there anything that struck you or stood out that you'd want everybody else to know?
I think there is, and I might have a unique perspective because, again, I'm half-time here at the Institute and half-time clinical still, so trying to see both sides of it. I work in an outpatient clinic over on the other side of town. And I think what everybody has said in their own way and in their own arena and with their own words is really the importance of the communication. That's really what our gift is. I think that's why we're here. That's why we're doing these jobs. But I think we're the ones that are going to make the change happen. The systems may not want that to happen, whether it be payers, whether it be bosses trying to make more money, whether it be egos of other professionals who may not want to play the game the way that may be the best. But I think when we look, especially if we're talking to students, you guys are the change. If you're not going to do it, nobody's going to be able to do it. So in my first year students, I often say, and it comes back to something we talked about in terms of the interviewing part, you have to make sure that the people you're going to go work for are going to allow you to work the way that you know is right. Because we put this stuff out there. We've put out there this collegiality and this interprofessional and, you know, but what does it really mean? And you, again, that stat, I didn't know that stat about 0.7% of, you know, non-work rate for PTs. That's yeah. Awesome. And it makes you a consumer. It gives you the power to decide, wait, I don't actually want to work for you because I don't think I could work the way that I want to. To me, that's how this is all going to change. And it's not going to be easy because there are some pretty powerful forces when it comes to payers and, you know, people who own these clinics or big rehab companies. But when we hear these life-threatening stories, when we hear people not getting better, when we hear people dropping the ball and people really losing out on a system that, to be honest, could be a whole lot better, that's really what should motivate you to think about how can I do my little part in this company that I work for, this clinic that I work for myself, whatever it is that I do, to be able to try to help make that change my little bit. And if everybody does that, we go along.
Chris, leading off with a very solid parting shot, but went early with it. I like that. You were over there thinking about it. I like how when we do a panel like this, we get someone who comes in towards the end, and you're able to absorb a lot of the things, especially when we're talking about working together, and you're able to hear that. What are some of the changes, going back to students? I'll ask a similar question that we asked Laura. What are some of the changes that you get to see in students who work interprofessionally in this setting here at MGH from beginning to end?
I think, again, I don't have a role in the impact program currently, but I think one of the things that we try to do in the first year of curriculum is really put people on the spot in, you know, students will attest that I am a demanding individual when it comes to what I expect from my students. But we make sure that they're in a comfortable environment so that handing them a microphone in a room full of 70 people who are trying to learn the same stuff is a comfortable place for them to be. and fumble through words and struggles of saying, for example, hey, here's your patient case. You need to tell the doctor that you don't think they're doing well and you need help. Here's the microphone. Now practice that phone conversation.
That's hard.
It's extremely hard, but yeah. I think that's what we need to do. And it's the communication that we're all talking about is how do we put a message out there that people can hear? And the physician doesn't want to talk to us. We're annoying. We're about to make them look bad if the patient's not doing well. So I have to come up with a way to sell this message to the doc that makes it so that we can move forward. And I think if we can do that in class, if we can do that in these truly safe environments, then hopefully it's not in the ED where somebody's life might depend on it, or in the hospital settings where there's multiple people really trying to have impact. But if the communication's not there, if the messages aren't being created and put forth in the right way, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, I love the fact that you guys are focused on that because it's often overlooked or it's often put on a bulleted list of things that are important or things that you should do. I remember going through acute care and neuro and just seeing patient education kind of thrown on a list. And I was like, well, the professor's just putting it on there to kind of beef up that bulleted list of things to do. And then I worked with humans who were a lot that were not robots that I could just kind of tell what to do, but you realize that patient education, that communication from provider to patient, from provider to provider, provider to caregiver, it matters what and how you say it. That's a big deal. Yeah. So what are some of your passions? I like the fact that you're a clinician part-time and an instructor, no matter how low on the totem pole, that's a big deal. It's an interesting viewpoint because you get to bring a lot of that, experience currently treating into the classroom. What are some things that you make sure get into the curriculum from that?
You're right. It is. I feel like it's a gift that I get to have two full-time jobs, but
gifts that keep on giving. Yeah,
it's great because I try in my teaching work to really keep it real for the students so that they're not just looking at some 14-page long protocol for an ACL reconstruction, but actually what does that mean and what are we going to do with the person today? This is what they come in, this is their complaint, what are we going to do with that?
Yeah,
so really making it real so that they can start to practice that game of what am I going to do when I actually have a patient in front of me?
Yeah, I remember I was trying to memorize protocols in like ortho, and then my professor wisely said, great, well, what if I just change this one thing? I don't Google a new protocol.
What if your knee's really swollen
right.
today? What do you do?
What do you do now? Mm. And I like that almighty why. We do want to get to some questions from the students, but I wanted to give you a chance for your parting shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
Brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. The Brooks IHL hosting their third annual scholarly symposium. That's on May 19th in Jacksonville, Florida. Chad Cook is the keynote speaker. The day's filled with evidence-based scholarly activities. You do not want to miss it. Register today at brooksihl.org.
You've had the longest to sit here and contemplate.
Yeah, my parting shot's easy. I think I knew it before I walked in today. And that is that you all, students and PTs out there, if you don't already know how to do this, is you need to figure out how to come across and be smart enough that you feel confident enough to say, I don't know.
Powerful words right there.
Keep up with the show online, ptpinecast.com, and on the socials, at ptpinecast.
And we're back.
Let's get back to the show.
All right, last but not least, one of your own. Apparently she volunteered for this. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's Emma Laird. Emma, what year?
I'm a third-year student. A
third-year student from where?
San Francisco Bay Area.
All right. Ooh, yeah. All right. Going out there this summer. So you've been here listening to these professionals talk about the Impact Program, but you've gone through it.
I have.
So give me an experience. What was it like? Was it nerve-wracking? Because I'm simulated patients with a bunch of people in the room. I wanted to focus on that first. What was that like?
I don't think that was particularly nerve-wracking. I think at the same time, like you're in the room with other students too. So I think you kind of recognize that none of us really know the answer and we're all working through that together.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say that experience was particularly nerve-wracking, but I do think that one of the advantages of being able to talk to other students in different professions was that, when we went out on full-time clinical, I don't have a great idea what every other profession does, but I at least had some idea. And I think that was really beneficial.
I mean, having a starting point is huge.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you make assumptions, and then everything else is built off that incorrect assumption.
Right.
What are some things that you liked about the impact part of the curriculum?
I do like the simulations. I think they're helpful. I think sometimes as students, we kind of have that same feeling of like, man, it's 6 o'clock at night on a Wednesday. Like, this isn't exactly where we want to be, but I think at the end of the 2 hours, I think at the end of the 2 hours, we come out feeling better about it and feeling like we got something out of the experience. And I think that that says a lot in and of itself.
So what makes a good physical therapist who's able to communicate with other healthcare practitioners?
I think you have to be able to speak a lot of different languages. And I think kind of really recognizing where other people are coming from, like you talk about the lens that people are viewing their patients through, and recognizing that sometimes that lens is going to be different from our own, and not taking offense to that and not being defensive, but really being more open-minded and being able to communicate with open language. Yeah. That illustrates that point.
It's big. What sort of advice? Yeah, you can clap for that. It's fine. Pull out. What sort of hints would you give or inside knowledge if a student were going to come into this program next year? So they're not here yet. Mm-hmm. To pay attention, to be really to get the most out of that program, no matter how late at night and a Wednesday it is.
I think talk to the other students that are there, right? I mean that's what they're creating that opportunity for. Is we as PT students, we don't take classes with the PAs and we don't necessarily take classes with the OTs. So use those 2 hours to really find out what's important to them, and don't always make it so professional. Like, connect with your other students just on a personal level as well. And I think that that goes a really long way too.
Wow, asking first. Who would have thought, right? Yeah, you can clap. You were about to clap. Clap for that. There you go. Emily, so excited. All right, you ready for your mic drop moment?
Sure.
Emily, what's your parting shot?
Gosh, I was thinking about this because everyone had great ones before me. I think, and this is something that I still struggle with as a student, but I think going out into the clinic, we have to start to be comfortable with the gray area and the unknown. And I think that's really hard for us to do as students, because we recognize that the more we learn, we realize that there's a lot that we don't know. And I think a lot of times we can get paralyzed by everything that we don't know. And like Chris kind of made me think about that is, well, what can you do today? What can you do for this person right now? And I think just being comfortable in the gray area and also being confident in what we know we can do, because we know more about physical therapy than that patient in the room probably. And we're able to help them and do what you can.
Emma Laird dropping parting shot on us.
Like what you hear? Tell a friend or leave a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right, so we got two mics up here. We'll spread those out. So thank you guys. That was awesome. This is the point where we get to, if you were listening and wanted more clarification, because I know, you know, I told the story before we started where I was listening to someone talk and they were going and I just wanted to ask them that one simple question. So you can ask a question specifically to someone who spoke tonight, who's sitting up here, or you can ask kind of a broad question and anybody can choose to answer. Or you can ask a question and I'll make your professors answer them because I have the microphone. So who's going to go first? Got the question. In the back. I'm just going to reiterate so everybody listening later. Have you seen anything policy-wise to kind of force this collaboration or improve this collaboration? And if not, do you have an idea of... It's kind of like fixing the system, or saying sometimes the system gets in the way. How do we fix that? Since you guys are like in the machine, you can rage against the machine now, but, you know, fix it while you're raging. What do you guys think?
I'm going to slightly change my answer to the question in that it's not so much policy, but the system. And I think one thing that my outpatient, I worked in pediatric outpatient therapy for years, and one of the things we did, even though you guys hate doing these things in the first year of class, is we actually looked at our learning styles and our work approach to being job employees in our jobs. In our professional roles. And so in that exercise where I learned that what I value most is the caring part of caring for my pediatric patients, I learned that my PT colleague, who was the person I treated my patients alongside and with, valued systems and sticking to the rules and policies that come with payor systems. And so suddenly I learned that some of our strife in forming our team work together was because we approached our care differently, not just because of our different lens from our therapy roles, but also because we were different people in terms of how we approached it. So I keep talking about lenses, maybe it's because I wear them all the day, but I think the key point is we took an active role in figuring out who we all were as individuals on our team, and then that informed how we worked together as team members. So that was in my clinical practice. So it worked, it made the system better in terms of how we approached our patient care.
It's kind of like self-reflection first and see how you fit within that system to work best. Yeah. Thank you for asking that, because usually the first one's very difficult to get out. Who's got another one? I'll make them ask anything you want. Yes. So I heard two things in your question. One was term protection. That's a policy, like using the term. That's something the APTA exists for, and again, advocating, 100% agree that. The second thing, how good is everybody in this room or listening to this right now at explaining what you do and can do for someone else? The reason I have a job doing this is because I have a degree in it, but I did it over and over and over and over again. I'm not perfect at it. I'm not an expert. I'm not selling a course. What I'm telling you, it's the same thing you learn in PT school. Repetition. Doing it really, really well. Now, that's something that other professions are good at doing because they've done it over and over and over again. Yes, I understand that in some professions, chiropractic, they might include some business courses in it. Great. Doesn't mean you can't do it now. But I'm talking about explaining, because you said a family friend, right? Shoulder, family friend. How good are you at explaining what you can do to someone else? Like you said in the class, like calling that physician in a mock simulation, like that's not easy in the beginning, but the more you do it, repetition, you get better at it. But I think it's a killer question and something that needs to be paid attention to more, because if it's not, we're just going to atrophy and bitch about it.
Yeah, Jimmy, let me touch on that as well. So, you know, I have a very different perspective than most
everyone of
my colleagues, right? Because I spent the last couple decades in the military. And I would say it's a beautiful scenario when money is taken out, right? And so physical therapists and chiropractors and OTs and PAs, I mean, some of my closest colleagues for most of my, I would say my favorite positions as a physical therapist were the physician assistants that I worked with. And so one of the things I did when I was at Fort Carson was I said, you know what, I'm going to go spend 2 weeks in the chiropractic clinic, because, you know, I had these preconceived notions, and, you know, my physical therapy colleagues and I would talk a lot of smack about the chiropractors. But, you know, something in the military that we have a lot of is musculoskeletal injuries, and there's enough to go around, right? And so, like, if they were going to see some shoulder injuries and maybe some of the back pain, or have at it. Right, because I have a 3 to 4 week, you know, waiting time to get in to see me. And I also had colleagues, though, that would not co-treat. So if someone was being seen by the chiropractor, they refused to see them in the physical therapy clinic until they were either finished with their course of chiropractic care or decided to just end it then. And I think that's unfortunate. So I never had that rule. And so most of the students I work with, they know that I'm okay with doing things a little differently. So, you know, in the clinic that I was in, it's like, well, they don't have to see you then. They can see me and I'll work with the person. And maybe I'll just go over there and ask them, hey, what are you doing for Jimmy? Because maybe I have something else to offer and maybe we can do this together. And that's sort of the theme of what we're talking about up here right now, right? And so don't be frustrated by it, right, or upset by it. I mean, I don't think there will ever be a shingle hanging outside of, you know, Rich Westrick's physical therapy clinic that says that I offer chiropractics. But there are, you know, colleagues of mine that are chiropractors that I think we would be okay with saying, hey, Rich, I don't know what's going on with this person, and they may, and I may say the same to them, and maybe reach out a little bit. And so, you know, Chris mentioned, pop in. Like, what are these therapies you're offering? And but maybe spend some time with them and see what it is. You know, in the class that we're doing right now, we talked about the fact that, I think maybe it's in the spine elective, but we talked about the fact that you can go to a home and garden show and there will be 4 different chiropractors set up offering free exams of some sort. It's curious to me that they're there, right? You don't see like the PA or SLP or OT or the PTs hanging out there in between the shingles and the air conditioners. But they're good at the business,
reps,
right? And
reps.
Yeah, and so that you talk to them when they're there. See what they're all about. Get that free X-ray radiation, right, at the Home and Garden Show. But whatever. Yeah, if you don't know, right, you'll never know if you don't talk to them. That's
Go ahead.
I'm going to add too that in the inpatient setting in particular, we are often the largest advocates for one another. So when you're working with a patient, asking for consults for other providers who you think the patient will really benefit from is also an opportunity for us to help with the patient, to prove the value, and it really does go both ways. I mean, I ask for PT consults all the time, OT consults all the time, and vice versa. So remembering that, that's a big part of it too, that we can advocate for ourselves as well as for other professions.
You know, it's a good question when like people are chomping at the bit to get to answer it. No, I think it brings up a lot of great points. All right, we got time for one more. Who's got the last question? Go for it. Reiterate for the audience. Inpatient, it's very easy to see some collaboration because you're sometimes sharing the same EHR, sharing the same patients. How about outpatient? Do we see interprofessional collaboration getting better in that sort of setting when the providers are not in the same network, are not in the same geographic area?
Yeah, I think actually kind of what they were saying is, so I did home care for my second full-time clinical, and ironically, that's the setting where I saw the most interprofessional collaboration. And I think a lot of it started with the company that I was working with valued it. So every Thursday for half of our day, all of the clinicians would come to the company offices and we would have essentially case management meetings. And everyone would present on challenging cases and ask questions to the other professionals in the room about ways that they maybe could change treatments or if they thought that this patient would benefit from a speech consult. And we would schedule co-evaluations and co-treats when we could. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, as a student, I viewed home care as like the setting where you're completely alone. And that was a setting where I felt like I had the most backup from all the other professions, actually.
I like that one. All right. Want to thank the people on the panel for taking out their time and talk to us. Listen, I want to thank you guys for sticking around for an hour or two and talking about PT. I hope you guys took something away from these really, really smart people who are answering your questions and telling you about their insights. And just thank you guys for doing that and maybe continuing to do that in your career, because I know it will benefit your career and your patients. That's what it's all about. Thank you, MGH.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
Establishing permanent access to orthopedic rehabilitative services in the country of Haiti through direct patient care and clinical training of its citizens. That is what Stand the Haiti Project is. Find out how you can help at standhaitiproject.org.